Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been following their curiosity and are committed to innovating how and what they brew. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
Welcome to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis, the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I'm Greg Cott. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. The world's only rock and roll talk show is making its debut tonight on Chicago Public Radio.
And we've got a great show for you. We've got John Cale in the studio performing with his band, and we're going to interview him going way back to his early days in the Velvet Underground and up to his phenomenal new solo album, Black Acetate. We've got record reviews of the number one debut by Madonna, the number one debut by System of a Down, a couple of the biggest records at the end of the year, last few weeks.
We're also going to pop a quarter in the Desert Island Jukebox later on in the show.
But first, as always, we've got some music news.
Welcome to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Cott. My partner is Jim DeRogatis. And that was some audio from our very first episode on public radio in December 2005. When Jim's voice was probably, I'd guess, an octave, let's use musical terminology here, maybe an octave higher than it is now.
They're saying, our producers are saying I sounded like a chipmunk. When I listen to that now, I hear nerves. We were a little nervous about coming to public radio. The studio we were taping in had this bronze bust of Studs Terkel, all right, looking down on us. It was a little intimidating. We were coming to the house that Ira Glass built, okay?
Right.
Now, we had done Sound Opinions for 7 years on commercial radio together, but coming to public radio and reaching this audience had been our goal all along.
Yeah.
And here we are, 500 shows later.
We made it to the 500 show milestone in June, and what we're doing today is we're going to look back at a few of those highlights and a few of those shows. You know, our producers helped us pick these out. We kind of thought we knew what we did back then, but our producers have sort of nailed a few moments that they think define the show. And I'm a little worried because I'm thinking, you know, how are we going to sound in these episodes? But the thing is, a lot of what we do, Jim, is starting conversations about music rather than ending them. I think a lot of people say, you know, critics, you think you know everything, coming down from the mountaintop telling us what to think. I think our attitude on this show, or at least we've tried to project that, is that we're starting the conversation instead of ending it.
We never want to be the final word. We want to get the ball rolling. You know, you are still at the Chicago Tribune, Greg, in that very first introduction to show number one. I was at the Chicago Sun-Times. I spent 15 years there. I was proud to call Roger Ebert a colleague, and he was a hero of mine. And you worked with and were friends with Gene Siskel. And the elevator pitch for this show always was Siskel and Ebert talk about rock on radio instead of television. So, you know, for the last 5 years, I've been teaching full-time at Columbia College Chicago, as well as writing about rock and doing this show. You know, and it strikes me now whenever I mention Siskel or Ebert, the 22-year-old students don't know, right? We may now have been around long enough that people who are trying to do podcasts are saying, I want to do a podcast like DeRogatis and Cott.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Forget about Gene and Roger.
And do it better than those guys.
Well, that wouldn't be hard.
But I think one of the great gifts of being able to do something like this is to be able to talk to some of our heroes in depth. And at near the very top of that list, if not at the very top, I would say would be this guy that we're going to talk to.
Our first guest, John Cale, co-founder of the Velvet Underground. One of the things we pride ourselves in doing interviews is because of our history of as journalists and critics, being able to take artists someplace deeper. And I knew that Cale had dedicated this song I'm about to ask him about to his daughter. And I think, you know, this man is a legend who's been doing this for half a century.
Yeah.
One of the most important bands in rock history to both of us. And here's a moment I've never heard or seen or read about anywhere else.
John, why is Gravel Drive dedicated to your daughter, Eden?
Oh, it's my way of telling her that when it wasn't explained sufficiently to her when she was small that dad goes away because that's his job. He goes on tour and he comes back. And then, you know, one day dad didn't come back. So this is my way of saying dad's back.
Yeah.
He never left.
There's a great picture of her in your book where she's playing with the Warhol balloons at the Pittsburgh Museum.
Yeah.
I mean, it had to be. You know, I'm sure there were downsides, but it also had to be some great sides to having dad have had as many experiences and know as many people as you do.
Yeah, she's dealt with it pretty well.
Did she give you a response on the song? Have you talked to her about it?
Yeah, we, you know, it's a little few tears, you know. And
mm-hmm. It's interesting that music can be maybe a way of saying some things that you couldn't say in a conversation.
That's
right?
Very important. Journeys of a lifetime, leaving from here, traveling the edges like footsteps on a gravel.
That's John Cale with a live performance of Gravel Drive. Incredible, Greg. Our first show on public radio, December 2005.
Yes, Cale set a pretty high bar for us, Jim. But
I've been downhill since
there. Yeah, well, you know, a few times I think, man, this is just as cool as that. And I felt that way with Bootsy Collins.
Oh,
When I heard that we were going to be able to talk to Bootsy, I was just impressed. I just loved the opportunity. And why? Bootsy Collins, as a teenager, playing with one of the greatest musicians, pioneers of the 20th century. He was the bass player for James Brown in the late 60s, early 70s, and then moving on to George Clinton in Parliament Funkadelic, you know, a few months after that. This amazing story about how he first met Clinton. And as you've said many times, he's told stories that we can't possibly air.
Oh, you got to come up to us if you ever run into us at a bar or a rock club or at a bookstore and ask us about the stuff we had to cut out of the Bootsy interview, as long as you're over 18.
Exactly. Here's Bootsy Collins on Sound Opinions.
Bootsy, after backing James Brown in the 70s with the JBs, your next move was to Detroit to start working with George Clinton. How'd that come together?
Well, actually, we get a call from the Spinners who initiated the move and who initiated the whole thing about hanging in Detroit. They wanted us to come up to be their band. You know, we wanted to go up there and be the band for the Spinners, but at the same time, we were so sick and tired of playing behind singers. We wanted to actually be a band. You know, we wanted to be freaks, you know? We wanted to be the first band. We wanted to be one of the main bands that just freaks everybody out. And when we get there, we run into this girl named Malia Franklin. We're playing at a club, and she says, man, have y'all ever heard of Funkadelic? And we was like, you know, we kind of hear about them every now and then, every gig or two we come across, and people say we look and sound like Funkadelic. She told us that we need to meet George Clinton. I told her to go ahead and set it up because he sounded like somebody I wanted to meet. Sure enough, went over and met with him, and man, that was a freaky freaky deal. I mean, to go to George Clinton's house and knock on the door, and the door opens like, you know, one of those haunted house kind of screeches. You know, that kind of thing, that the Addams Family thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk in and I look around. It's like black lights everywhere and no furniture. And then I see this thing sitting over in the corner, you know. And it's George with a sheet on. Oh, man. So as soon as I saw that, I knew. I was like, yeah, this is it for me. Everything we talked about, we set out to do.
That was Bootsy Collins interviewed on Sound Opinions in 2011. And Jim, another highlight, and I don't think we could have done a retrospective show like we're doing here, looking back at 500 shows of Sound Opinions without getting to this next guest.
Well, when you think about the two of us sitting down in a room alone with Yoko Ono, our producers and her people in another part of the studio, I mean, Greg, there's probably no woman more famous on planet Earth right now. Infamous sometimes, wrongly so, the woman who broke up the Beatles, right? There's all these cliches. We know her history. It was the first time I was interviewing her in person. I think you chatted with her before. You know, we wanted to go deep, but we got her to warm up by talking about being this young woman from Japan, came to New York, didn't know anybody, and within a couple of months is playing with jazz greats in the improvisational scene like Ornette Coleman.
Right.
And we could both see the light switch on. These guys are not just going to sit here and ask about why did I break up the Beatles. These guys know who I am. And what a wonderful conversation we had from there.
There was a side of John's music that came out when he started collaborating with you. I mean, it must have sounded like just pop music to you. How do I belong in this world with what the Beatles were doing, was what I'm saying.
Well, you see, but in the avant-garde, when I was in Sarah Lawrence and I was making sort of music, composing music that was like 12-tone or something like that, and it was getting so difficult, I just didn't enjoy it so much, you know. And I was thinking, wow. And then when I met John and the rest of them and all that, and what they were doing was, maybe it's not the way to express it, but it's sort of simplistic but beautiful, you know. Mm. And I really enjoyed that. I thought, wow, this is what you don't have to do 12-tone. You do this.
You can
great,
have fun.
You know? And you can have fun too, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I just got into it, and I was very, very happy about that. It was a relaxing kind of feeling. It was beautiful, yeah.
I think that's an element that people miss a lot. Now, there's a quote, and it's one of these things, you know, it could be apocryphal. It's probably, people have been saying, you've said it now for 40 years, that every artist is a conceptual artist. I am a con artist, which is very, very funny. If you didn't say it, you should take credit for it anyway.
Well, I did say it.
But it shows a sense of humor that I think a lot of times people never got that. You were wickedly funny, and you wanted to have fun.
Yeah, well, you know, I just wanted to say that, but I mean, in those days, I wasn't scared of anything. Now, I can see that it's a very different age and a different world, and you have to be very careful. You don't say things like, I'm a con artist, you know. Mm. In those days, I was just being an artist and said anything I liked, probably.
Yeah. Do you hear echoes of what you guys did in Plastic Ono Band when you see something like Sonic Youth perform today?
Yeah, well, I don't want to say that, you know, sort of like, anybody, the younger people, were influenced by us or anything like that, because that's precisely the kind of thing that, you know, your parents would say, oh, well, you know, we did that or something. You know, I don't want to say that. But I think it's great that, you know, they're sort of based on that sort of situation that we created, they went further, I think.
So
it's
sure.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a spirit. Yeah. I think you gave people the feeling that they could do it. And yeah. Certainly a lot of young female artists in particular look up to you as being a trailblazer. It's like, you know, look at the amount of crap that this woman took in her lifetime. It's never going to be that hard for me. I can do it too. I can play guitar. I can do avant-garde music. I can mix hip-hop records, and I'm a woman and nothing's going to stop me.
My awareness about being a woman was not that way at all. I was just being myself, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yoko Ono on Sound Opinions in 2007, one of our many extraordinary interviews. That might be right at the top there.
Oh, right? Yeah. That was so much fun. And this next guest was a lot of fun, too. Rivers Cuomo of Weezer. We've known him for a long time, reviewed him, and we were pleased to know that, at least at the time, that Rivers was a listener to Sound Opinions.
He tweeted about it once in a while.
I don't know if he was a huge fan of the show or of us, but he certainly listened to what we had to say, and I think he definitely heard what we had to say about his band, and that was part of the reason that he wanted to come into the show and talk with us about himself and about the reasons that he's done the things that he's done in Weezer. And it was really one of the most open interviews I think we've ever had with an artist in talking about the basis for their art and the decision-making behind it.
As befits a Harvard graduate. You know, what was also extraordinary was the performance, Greg. He did not want to come in and play with Weezer or play solo. He said, find me a band.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I will play my songs with this band. Now, I'm in a garage band. I play, you know, only punk rock dives in Chicago. There was this wonderful mix of Riot Girl and glam rock band called Kathy Santoni's. It was four women. They're playing their last show this week. They're finally breaking up. And Rivers, from the get-go, knowing I'm going to play with these four punk glam rock women, he just loved this idea. He mm-hmm. wanted to be challenged in what he played for us. In all the years of doing this show, this is the one of the most unique tapings we have ever done.
It is the most unique taping we've ever done. I feel like Phil Spector today.
I do. We feel like producers.
Yeah.
So first of all, Rivers, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And we have a wonderful band who you met all of about 20 minutes ago. They're the Kathy Santoni's. So Rivers, what the heck are you doing here? What was this idea about?
Well, I don't know. I just love to mix it up and try different things and play with different musicians from different backgrounds and put myself in uncomfortable situations and and see what happens. Live on the edge. And we did it last year with Weezer. We'd invite 100 to 200 Weezer fans down to the show, and they brought their instruments, whatever instruments they happen to have, and we had to make music with these people, and it was super invigorating for me. And then writing songs for Ratitude, I continued that spirit of collaboration and reached out to other musicians and songwriters and jammed with them and came up with some of the songs for the record. So I thought it would be fun to not only play with some musicians here I'd never met before, the Santonis, but also to involve you guys as producers and masterminds.
Masterminds, I love that word.
Oh no, it go, it gone, bye bye.
That is one of the big accusations that's leveled at you the last few years, is that you're writing for the marketplace. In fact, I said that on the previous record. I thought there's a little bit of pandering almost going on here. It's like you're trying to imagine.
I love that word.
Yeah.
Because a lot of critics were saying the same thing, but they didn't hit the nail on the head. And when you use the word pandering, I think that really crystallized the whole criticism. That's what people think I'm doing.
So how do you address that? You're saying you're not doing that. You're not imagining what the marketplace wants and giving it to them. It's coming from a different place.
No, I wouldn't go as far as to say that. I mean, I do think of my audience. I also think of, like, what am I trying to say here? And it's finding the language that I can communicate what's going on inside me to a wider audience.
So it's still coming from a personal place is what you're saying.
Yeah, it starts out from a personal place, and then I have to figure out how to communicate it to a wider audience. Sometimes I don't get it great. Sometimes it comes off like pandering.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's magic.
I'm a lot like you, so please. Hello, I'm here, I'm waiting.
That is Rivers Cuomo playing with the Kathy Santonis from 2010. And wow, spontaneous combustion, right?
That's
instant music in the
roll.
Studio.
Happens here in the moment. We want to hear what listeners think. What are your favorite moments from the first 10 years of Sound Opinions? What would you like to hear in the next 10 years? Call us on our hotline, 888-859-1800. We'll continue our celebration of 500-plus episodes in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
When I wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you.